Strachan and Bell together. There's Cooper breaking through. A chance now, this will be the fourth goal for Aberdeen. Cooper puts it in with Chris Brendan really. Well, suddenly it's become a rout.
Of course, when things are going wrong against you, you don't get the breaks of the ball. Cooper in with Stewart. He didn't really know where the ball was, but he got the break. And as you say, it's a schoolboy's dream, being able to take your time, knowing that really all you got to do is crack it into the back of the net.
Hello and welcome to the Here We Go podcast. So I said to the lads a couple of weeks ago, let's just not do a podcast, let's wait a couple of days and wait and see if we get a managerial appointment to discuss. Those couple of days turned into a couple of weeks as the very final stages of the managerial appointment. It turned out to be an estimate of time similar to the very final stages of the Holocene era. We're a couple of weeks further on from that Alan Bowers interview and still no official confirmation, but certainly all the signs are pointing to the fact that we're going to get white smoke coming out of the Pittodrie main stand chimney soon, and that it is indeed going to be Jimmy Thielen who will take the reins. Now, joining me tonight to discuss that news, is it news? I suppose it's still speculation at this point, but all the signs, all the jungle drums are something pointing towards that direction. Who knows, it might still be Michael O'Neill, if you believe certain ITK sources. But joining me to discuss that tonight is Martin Ingram. Good evening, Martin.
Good evening. I think it was a good decision to wait until something topical came up. It's like London buses. Suddenly, at least a couple of topical things have come up in the same evening. So.
And to Martin Clunas.
Yeah, just delighted to have something to talk about that isn't going to be the 0-0 against Livingston and nothing else.
Yeah, I'm still going to force you to spend a couple of minutes on that at least. I'm going to force you to come up with something to say that isn't VAR related. That's a challenge for you. You may want to take some notes down already. So it would appear that after a long and fairly convoluted pursuit via way of two caretaker managers, that Dave Cormack has got his man, and that man is Jimmy Thielen, currently manager of IF Elfsborg in the Allsvenskan. Now, came narrowly close to winning the league last season. Probably shouldn't point out that he rather bottled winning the league last season by drawing it home to a team that got relegated on the penultimate day of the season, then losing a head-to-head against Malmo on the final day of the season. But still, it's been a good career progression for the Swede, and if the reports in the Swedish press are to be believed, then he and his two assistant coaches will join up on June the 1st. So there's a couple of things to discuss here, Martin Ingram. Obviously, the first one is that it will be a summer transition, which I suppose we can understand perhaps there has been, that's maybe contributed to the delay as Aberdeen looked to plug the gap that has been occurred as a result of Neil Warnock moving on sooner than expected.
Well, in my opinion, the first thing that needs to be discussed is how we're actually going to pronounce his surname. Magical...
Okay. How did I get it wrong?
No, I think this is still up for confirmation, but there's a magical piece of commentary for those of us who are old enough to remember it. Euro 92 and the winning goal for Sweden against England. And it was Brolin, brilliant goal. So I'm pretty confident that it's Tallinn. But whether it's a hard T or a soft T, I think will need to be confirmed. So it'll either, if it's not Tallinn, it'll be Tallinn. But I think it's Tallinn.
Let me get Derek Gray on the blower.
He will be the one that, if I was going to take any man's opinion on that, other than obviously the manager himself, it would definitely be Derek Ray. But yeah, first of all, if what is being rumored is true and he's going to come in at the beginning of June, I think that probably makes a lot of sense. I think there was some discussion around, and again, maybe let's get what we kind of all knew, and we spoke about this at the time, out of the way, that to a greater or lesser extent, what Neil Warnock was sharing in his post-match press conference when he walked out the door was a load of bullshit. But it may well obviously have been that this was, if this was the man that was envisaged to come in at some point, then those negotiations may well have been coming, or may well have been ongoing at the time that Neil Warnock was going out the door. But I don't think there was ever any intention in the club to bring him in at the point that Neil Warnock left. I think it had been the intention beforehand that Neil Warnock would see his position through until the end of the season, and then they could then, if they managed to be successful in getting their target, then they would essentially seamlessly transition from that into the new manager. But it's maybe not the ideal scenario for us, in that, well, I mean, I dare say the ideal scenario is you don't go through three managers before you get to the person that you identify as the man that's going to take your club forward. But given that we are where we are, undoubtedly there would have been some advantages to if we'd been in a position that we could have gotten him out of his contract now and gotten him through now, then there would always be a lot of advantages about maybe taking over, kind of similar to what the situation was when Derek McInnes took over from Craig Brown, where you've still got the incumbent team in charge for the rest of the season, or in the background for the rest of the season, but you can come in for a kind of a 5-6 game period, get an actual feel for the set of players that are involved, who you might want to keep, who you might not want to, and be able to do that from within the club and watching the games. But this is probably the second best option, where even if he isn't officially coming until the end of the season, you would at least now in a situation where we know he's going to be the manager coming in, he knows he's going to be the manager coming in, and while you might not literally be physically in at the grounds to watch what's going on, you're at least in a situation where you're party to kind of conversations around who we currently have in the club, who you want to keep, who you don't want to. So that makes a lot of sense. It'll be an interesting appointment. I think it is very heartening that we have been able to get hold of, it seems, the manager who we had targeted to bring in from the outset. I think once it got to a stage where it was obvious he was the person who was the first choice, I think it would have been yet a further embarrassment and climb down if he had ultimately said no to us and we'd have had to go looking for another option. But the one thing I really hope, and again, we obviously don't know what the immediate future is going to hold, but at some point, if we're serious as a club about a vision, an infrastructure and a direction going forward, we need to at some point hold on to a manager for longer than a 12-month period. And if that means forbearing, and again, hopefully he'll get to an absolute flying start and we'll be soaring up the table. He'll have some way to go to match Jim Goodwin's flawless League Cup group stage record, but anything close to that in the immediate incumbency will do fine. But I think at some point, now that we have the manager who we're looking for, hopefully together with whatever internal restructuring we were looking to put into place in advance of him coming into tow, what I'd like, and this is probably from the support as much as it is from the club infrastructure, I think we need to give this the fullness of time to see whether it's successful or not, because this really does need to be the one which is successful. Because if we find ourselves in exactly the same situation 12 months on from now, I think there's no longer just questions about who the right manager is in charge. I think it really then has to be who are the right people in charge.
I'll come back to that later because Jimmy, his record at Elfsborg was certainly not one that had success immediately. But to, I suppose, praise the board, because we have been giving them an awful lot of stick for what has been a convoluted and muddled process to date, full of the wrong moves. They have finally got their man, Martin Clunas. So a degree of satisfaction, I suspect, for the chairman with regards to that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like the Mountie, Dave Cormack's got his man. And he will definitely be, you know, they've identified him in the first place, obviously identified before Neil Warnock came in. You know, as Martin says there, you know, you would have wanted him to stick around till the end of the season to get a handover. As it is, Peter Levenson going to be in charge at the end of the season. But I'm sure that the board will be happy. They do deserve credit. I mean, this guy was the first choice. If we're led to believe, even though he was the main guy. As much as we've heard about Michael O'Neill, as much as heard all this kind of stuff going on that I don't think really any of us actually believed. It was more just sort of in the nose on the old social media. But yeah, if you identify someone as your first choice and you can get hold of him, granted it's been a bit protracted and there's also been things to be sorted out, but you know, delighted he's got them. You know, and you know, the board are probably, you know, by this guy being the first choice, they've bought themselves a little bit of good faith, I think, back from the support. Not a lot, because people are obviously very unhappy with how things have gone this season, you know, and past seasons, obviously, with the Glass, Goodwin, Warnock, all this sagas. But I think by having this guy as being your first choice, going out there, it's taken some time, but they've managed to get them, then, you know, good on them, I suppose, you know. A minor pat on the back, I suppose you would say. One thing, Martin, I just want to pick you up on something you said there, Martin, though. Obviously, your pronouncing of his name, I have to take umbrage with that because that doesn't rhyme with ceiling or feeling, and we need to put his name into a song. So, you know, not to question your obviously Scandinavian knowledge, but
it maybe aligns more with my American football knowledge, because as you know, I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan, and so I think what a lot of the fan base will go with is the Vikings had a former wide receiver, Adam Thielen. So Thielen in that regard would work a lot better for song lyrics and song titles, and you never know, it may well be the case that correct pronunciation will have to make way for
we're just going to get the undertones back, aren't we? We're going to get the undertones back before and after the match on the tunnel, which at least means that fucking awful sub-pigeon detectives bullshit might finally be moved off the rotor.
I'm just thinking about the positive things, you know. I mean, I don't want to talk about you know, formations or anything like that. Let's get the songs going first and then we can worry about the rest of it.
So coming back to that point you've made, Martin, about patience. This is not the modern football fan, in fact, I'm not going to limit it to Aberdeen. The modern British football fan certainly is not a supporter that exudes patience. Jimmy, in his, I'm stepping out of the argument, I'm just going to call him Jimmy for the time being. His first season at Elfsborg, he finished 12th in a 16-team league. Now, this wasn't just with a newly promoted team. This was with a side which had spent the last decade finishing in the top half of the league, had in fact won the league 6 years earlier. Clearly a young manager at that point, a manager believed to be on the up, but that's a level of patience that the board and presumably the supporters at Elfsborg demonstrated that I cannot see an Aberdeen fan base demonstrating if we were to finish in a similar position in a 12-team league.
Yeah, I think this comes to an aspect we've discussed many times before, is that as a support, we obviously are a wide and diverse fan base, and for individual supporters, And I know this podcast has said repeatedly people are entitled to support the team however they want, and in whatever, and we wish to express themselves in whichever manner they want, as long as it's not bordering on hate crime. But it's one thing if a manager, you're absolutely right, we have to be realistic, if a manager in a club is not performing to the levels of their expectations, then there will inevitably be an element of supporter backlash. But my main concern with the running of the club over the last few years is how quickly our board and chairman seem willing to make a rapid decision the moment the wind turns, and they are being viewed to be in a situation which is not popular with potentially not even a majority of the fan base, but a substantially vocal element of the fan base. And I think we're not here to rehash how things have gone in the last few years, but projecting forward, I think there becomes a point where if the chairman and the board are backing themselves in terms of making what they feel is, again, they've got the man that they were gunning for. You quite rightly flag up some of the issues that he may well have had earlier in his career as a young manager. I mean, he's still a relatively young manager as it is right now. I was just having a quick look. 46 years old is by no means a dinosaur in European football. So, you know, he's still on that development path, but certainly comes into it with substantially greater managerial chops than, say, Stephen Glass when he came in, or Barry Robson when he took the role on from an interim position. So if he is the person that we've identified as being the right fit for the club's structure and footballing philosophy, I think there becomes a point where, unless results get to a stage where the position becomes untenable, and I think that obviously got to a situation where we were with Jim Goodwin last season, and maybe arguably where we'd find ourselves with Barry Robson this time around as well, you may well get to a situation where that kind of decision becomes inevitable. But there needs to be a point at which we have some form of stability within the club. And again, even if there is some unrest, I would like to think that there's a point where if there's courage in the convictions of those people that are making decisions to appoint these people, because again, the reality will be, to my mind, that if you're then getting this wrong the third and fourth time, I think you've then got to genuinely question, is it the fact that three or four managers all have managed to find Aberdeen this unfathomable problem that they can't get their heads around, or is it actually something more fundamental with regards to the infrastructure within the club? And I think at that point you really then have to say, are we actually being, is the leadership in the direction of the chairman and the board the correct one going forward? And I think in reality that is likely where the iron of sport is more likely to start turning this time around if it isn't successful.
Well, there was famously one Aberdeen manager who has previously come from non-British shores, and he made the worst possible start you could ever imagine as Aberdeen manager. But he retained the support of the Aberdeen fan base for long, long beyond it was considered plausible. And I think part of the reason for that at the time was Martin Clunas, a rejection perhaps of the overwhelming, what people saw as a kind of media-driven narrative about, you know, about shitting on Aberdeen FC, and also that kind of almost xenophobia, I think, that they believed existed within the Scottish press at the time about a sort of non-Scottish manager, a manager from out with the usual collection of names, getting that job and not doing a terribly good job of it at the outset. It's the conditions are similar, I guess, for that to take hold again, I would argue. Hopefully we don't start off with seven straight defeats, obviously, starting next season.
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, that goes obviously goes without saying. But no, you're absolutely right. You look at sort of the names that were being put forward by the press back then and now. We're talking about people like Neil Lennon, of course, kept coming up, and that was totally media driven. His pals on Sky, his pals on TNT, his pals on Radio Scotland. That's all that was. You know, there was all these other names, like say Michael O'Neill and all that kind of stuff as well. And I think back then, you're right, it did. It kind of unified the support a bit as well. And then when the results weren't coming, I think the support just sort of, I don't want to say it galvanised the support, but it was a case of, the press were kind of, they've employed this foreigner. And I think, I know that for myself, felt that, you felt that maybe the media were a bit too harsh in Aberdeen at the time. And so you stuck together and you kind of lashed back and you went, well, as we're prone to do very often, just say, well, fuck the Glasgow press. I know we've said that many times since as well, to be fair. So I think that was the way back then. And I think there's a certain parallel with that now, where we don't want the same old names. I mean, we've said this before when we've had the managerial vacancy has been open. Personally, I, and I think most people, don't want the likes of John Hughes and all these names, Robbie Nielsen, the ones that keep coming up. You don't want one of these guys from the same old cycle, from the Scottish football pool. And I'm not saying that Jimmy Thielen's a massively exciting name or anything like that. It is a bit of a step into the unknown, I guess. But I don't really go for this whole, I've seen some people say, when they've been talking about the Lennons or the likes of that, it's like, no, well, you know what you're going to get with someone like that. He knows this, he knows the league, he knows this, he knows that. I don't always think that's a great thing. Jim Goodwin knew the league, didn't exactly do amazing. So it'll be certainly interesting to see how he copes. He comes in, I think he will have the full support of a large majority of the Aberdeen support. There'll be one or two, obviously, who'll have decided they wanted this guy, that guy, or whoever. But I do totally agree with that point you make there, Richard, that it's got a lot of parallels to when Ebb came in. Hopefully we can do a little bit better. Obviously don't want the runner results or the league position to be the same. I think we could do a lot better this time, definitely.
But there is a role for the supporters to play, whether that's the fact that they're galvanised by outside forces or not. But your message, Martin Ingram, is ultimately you want the board to show a bit more backbone in their decision-making process this time.
I do. The other aspect, I suppose, that we're glossing over at this point, because obviously the big news is around the fact that we have a manager who is imminent to come into play. But again, it's maybe taken deflected some attention away from what has been the ultimate outcome of the behind the scenes kind of root and branch review of the club structure and what we may or may not be doing with the much vaunted director of football operations that we've spoken about many times in the past. So there's the two aspects in relation to that. There's the courage of convictions in terms of the managerial appointment they're making and properly backing him in terms of resource, which in fairness hasn't been an issue in the last couple of seasons. I think the one thing that you probably couldn't criticize the club for is being able to back the last couple of managers, at least anyway, by bringing in good recruitment, paying money, paying decent wages in order to get a certain caliber of player into the club. So I don't have any real concerns in that regard, but I think there needs to be a certain element of presence of mind patience amongst the club, where if you're going to make the decision to bring somebody in, bring in a manager, bring in their assistants and bring that in. But the other aspect is where does that now sit within the overarching structure of what the club is now going to look like going forward? And we got a little bit of coverage around that in the immediate aftermath of Neil Warnock passing, but again, I think we all kind of recognize that was less a strategic update and more just kind of a few paragraphs that they felt they had to cobble together and throw out there. But since then, we haven't really had any further substantive update in relation to we know that Bernard Peters was brought in to spearhead that review of the club. We've been informed that review has taken place and that the club have taken that on board, but we really still don't know a lot of what either has already been implemented or what is going to be implemented in the future. And you would have thought that if you were taking your time, which I don't have any issue with, if you were going to take your time to make sure that you've got the correct manager in place, and if anything, it was probably all the more frustrating that I found that they felt the need to so quickly fall in line with the narrative that their outgoing caretaker manager had set in order to effectively, and again, for me, this feeds once again into this aspect of trying to move with the public narrative rather than actually just stick to your principles and tell people what it is. I would have had a lot more respect if they just come out and said, what Neil Warnock's just said in his way out is a load of bullshit. He's just walked out and left us. But, you know, rest assured, we are sticking to our process of doing the root and branch review of the club. We'll get that out of the way and then we'll bring a manager in place. And I think at that particular point in time, I just think they probably felt the... Because again, we don't need reminded just how desperate a situation it was looking just a couple of weeks ago. And I think the combination of the pressure that was on them coupled with just being like just so left in the lurch at the 11th hour, I think meant they felt they kind of just had to go along with the narrative that had already been set in the media. But that in itself is a part of a ongoing concern I have with to what extent do the chairman and the board actually have that prerequisite kind of backbone to actually stand up for themselves and say, no, this is what we think is the correct way forward and this is what we're doing. Not to the complete negligence or of what's actually going on in the real world, but that whole kind of period didn't leave me with any greater confidence around about that aspect of proceedings. But we'll give them the benefit of the doubt right now. They have gone through that process. I will wait with bated breath further information on what longer term changes that will mean for the club in terms of its internal infrastructure. But it has to be a good sign that in terms of the managerial selection, I had no issue with them taking the additional time to make sure that they get the right man in place for the job. And if they think he is the right man, I agree with what Martin said beforehand. I think this appointment there will never be an appointment which will meet with 100% universal approval amongst the support, but this is probably as close to a unanimous decision as we're ever going to get at the club. And I think hopefully coupled with, and again, we'll see. We'll get to the upcoming game on Saturday. But if we kind of couple that with getting ourselves a few steps further away from the concerns of the relegation playoff, that would certainly help, and would leave us with the ideal situation would be to get that resolved on the pitch with a few games to spare, and then provides us with a proper number of months where we can genuinely focus on what we need to do to fully prepare ourselves for the forthcoming season, and as you say, avoiding starting the beginning of next season with seven consecutive league defeats.
Yeah, I think your assumed narrative on Warnock may not actually fit with the verite, but never mind. That's for another time. Martin Clunas, there is absolutely an element of the fan base, however, that just wants the unknown, just wants the manager that they don't really know much about. They want us to go foreign for the sake of going foreign, almost. You know, those are the sort of people that got far more excited about the signing of Ronnie Hernandez than they would have done about the signing of Ross McCrory.
Oh, definitely. Look, you know, a fancy foreign name always excites people.
Jimmy.
You know what I mean, though. Some people want, you want that kind of step at the unknown. And I mean, we've been able to, in terms of, you look at players down the years, we've been able to laugh at, the likes of Hibs and Dundee United bringing in these, joke shop foreigners down the line. I mean, people like, you look at Dundee United and John Jack Missy and all these type of people. Some people want, it's better to bring in that than to bring in somebody from the Championship or, a young lad from League One and step into your team. And that's fair enough, it doesn't really matter in the end, as long as it's the right appointment, whether he's from Sweden or whether he's from, Greenock or where he's from Timbuktu, it really doesn't matter. All I really care about is it being the right appointment. And as it stands at the moment, that looks to be the right appointment.
Yeah, based on very little evidence, but
pretty much.
Something else happened today. The club came out with a strongly worded, I think will be what will be appearing in tomorrow's papers, statement on VAR based on the outcome of the incident that got reviewed in the final minute at the game at Livingston on Saturday. Now, this means that we actually have to spend some time talking about that Livingston game, which I really didn't want to do, Martin Ingram. But talk us through what happened and your views on it.
Well, I know you don't want to talk about it, Richard, but I generally never like missing an opportunity to pillory the VAR system as is currently operated within Scotland. And the long and short of it is that Aberdeen have managed to do the near impossible and release a club statement which seems to have universal approval amongst all clubs in Scotland. I saw social media reactions from supporters from Hibs and Hearts and Celtic all lining up and praising the position. But it really is, and this seems to be what they've issued in their own statement seems to be borne out by a subsequent statement released by the SFA, which seems to be an immediate response to what Aberdeen have come out with, which is effectively they had sought answers in relation to the process and protocol that was followed in the deliberations which led to the VAR decision, which turned over what at the time had been awarded as a winning goal for Aberdeen and ended up getting chalked off. And it transpired that as part of those discussions that they had with the SFA, it seems that the Hawkeye system that was used as part of the VAR process for being able to see whether the players were aligned in an onside or offside position failed at the time that Bojomjovski's injury time, open quotes, winner, close quotation, went in the back of the net. And again, my empathy to all of the supporters who traipsed Almond Vale for what must have been the true piece de resistance in terms of a gut punch followed by a kick in the balls. 90 minutes of utterly, by the sounds of things, putrid and terrible entertainment on the pitch for at the 12th 13th hour. You suddenly think that you've managed to salvage a victory from what has been a pretty traditional, boring, nil-nil, goalless fest against Livingston. The ball's gone in the back of the net. Players are celebrated, supporters are celebrated. Everyone's traipsed back to the centre circle to kick off. And then minutes after the event, where, again, one thing that I don't think anyone would disagree with is that the comment from in the statement in relation to the negative in-match supporter experience, because that's exactly what plays out in relation to that. But more damning is this kind of idea that in a situation where the technical system has failed, it appears that the video assistant referees that were looking at that decided that in the absence of a fully operational system, they essentially, it sounds like, they have just screenshotted or paused the video footage at a point that they think was correct and essentially tried to eyeball it. It seems a pretty incredible situation to have arrived at in the middle of a game. Not quite as bad as the one kind of glaring communication fiasco that happened with a match in the English Premier League earlier this season, but if this isn't the worst situation that's happened in UK football, that probably is going to be a strong number two, and certainly sounds like the worst complete failure of the VAR operation in north of the border in what has been an absolutely chock-full selection of fuck-ups throughout the entire season. In the initial situation, it just seems absolutely baffling that in a situation where the system, I mean, it's bad enough that the system failed at the situation, you know, again, of course it did, that it failed at the very situation in the match where a potentially decisive goal-scoring opportunity occurs. But then what seems to be, I mean, maybe they do have this worked in their process and protocol where if the operation fails, then the video assistant referees are allowed to make their best guess based on the video footage in relation to whether they thought it was a goal or not. The subsequent statement that was released by the SFA seemed to be trying to defend itself on the basis of now that they've been able to go back and have a look at the footage and employ the VAR technology that should have been operational at the time, they're now showing that it should have been declared as offside in the first place. But it just seems incredible to kind of suggest that it's okay that because it didn't work at the time and they've had a guess, it's okay now because that guess has been retrospectively found to be a correct guess. But you know, it feeds into the broader discussion of really is VAR as it's currently available to us in Scotland fit for purpose. The club now seem to be adopting the position that it's not. I think that seems to be a view which is shared by not only a number of other clubs, but certainly the vast majority of supporters. And you do wonder once there is a certain groundswell of opinions, both amongst the support and amongst the clubs, you do wonder whether we might be getting close to the death knell of VAR as it's currently implemented in the country. And given some of the acknowledgements that what we're currently operating is effectively the best version of VAR that we can afford, I think there is a saying that you either do something properly or you don't do it at all. And if what we're effectively admitting is we don't have the resources to be able to implement a fully operational and fully functional competent VAR system, my preference would be that we just don't bother with it at all.
But there's a much more existential issue around this, isn't there, Martin Clunas? It's around the fact that the match-going experience, to use a well-worn phrase, is a poorer product in the era of VAR, that it's a situation designed for the benefit of TV viewers and for a league which derives a significant proportion of its revenue from punters paying through the gate. it's making the product worse.
Oh, it absolutely is. I mean, you know, I would say that. Yeah, I would say that even the bigger leagues, if you want to call them that, in Europe, that have got it. No, they're being affected. You know, they're being affected by it. But in terms of Scotland, just it is so atrocious. Like, I mean, I'm not sure what the tickets were on Saturday. Let's what, 30 quid, 27, 30 quid, whatever they were, to go to the game. You know, let's forget about the other 89 minutes of it that happened in the game that was awful. There you are. You think you've scored last minute, brilliant, and then this happens, and it does. It sucks the life out of going to the game, because, you know, every time you know it's a goal, it's going to be checked. It could be pulled back. So every time there's a goal scored, there's a delay before kickoff can be taken, and it's going to get and it potentially could get pulled back, and it's ruining the match day experience. It doesn't matter whether your games are on television or not, really, you know, because we've seen long delays in our games. Was it the Hibs game or the Motherwell game? There was a really long delay. I can't remember. But there's been a few games we've had this season where the delays have been far too long. And, you know, I know we've gone for the cheaper option on the VAR. I'm not convinced that the more expensive option would be any better. The simple fact is if the VAR can't sort it within 30 seconds, 40 seconds, then it's not fit for purpose. It needs to be done. It needs to be able to be sorted ASAP.
But I don't think that's something that happens in any of the leagues in which it's...
Then it's not good enough that it should be gotten rid of. If you can't...
But that's not going to happen. Scored, we know that's not going
to
happen.
If you can't fix it in the time it takes, Boja Majowski, wheel away, celebrate, have a wee bounce, wave to the crowd, all that kind of stuff, and walk back to the centre circle. If the VAR can't rewind the footage, get the lines on the pitch and do that, in that time it happens... then it's not good enough.
But we know that's not going to happen because there will be pricks like us online who will moan and moan and moan when decisions aren't being picked up because they haven't had enough time. And we're trying to get to an objective point of view about a decision which ultimately will always be subjective.
I agree with that aspect to a certain extent, in that it's when you're talking about and I think I'm ultimately going to come round to a position which supports I would agreement with what Martin's saying ultimately, but I do agree with the point that if you were going to have the technology and you have a situation where you can use the technology to find out something which you can factually verify is correct or not. I don't think you can then say, because I don't think it's what Martin's suggesting either, but I have heard other pundits that were saying, if you can't get that outcome within 30 seconds, you should just move on. And that would just cause even more consternation, because if you said, okay, 30 seconds are up, we move on, but 35 seconds in, you realise that you've got a decision completely wrong, that's going to cause even more outrage. But I think what Martin and myself are both saying is that the overarching view from that is, if what we're saying is we can't have a system which will be able to get us, or which will be able to clarify and rectify clear and obvious errors within a period of time which is reasonable for match day supporters to be able to effectively know that if their team has scored a goal, they can happily go and celebrate that and have confidence that that's what the decision is, then the better outcome probably is to not bother having that system in place at all. And sure, I think what we've found, that regardless, the fundamental position that I've landed up is that supporters are never going to be happy with decisions. And it's clear, and I think we all recognise this from the beginning, when we're having situations that, you know, whether something is offside or not was one of the couple of scenarios that we thought, well, whatever other debates we might have about what should be constituted as a handball, or you know, has a challenge that's been made, would you view that as a high degree of danger or not? These will always be to a certain extent a subjective decision. whether something's offside or not is as close to an objective decision as you're ever going to be. And the reality of what we've found, and again, that's not just here, that's south of the border, that's other places as well. Even something like that is ultimately subjective, because again, at what point of the ball being contacted do you freeze the frame? Are we viewing a player whose torso is behind the defender but whose toe is in front of it? Is that different? So even with things that you would have thought, you know, once we have technology in place, we'll never have to debate whether something is offside or not ever again. We're finding that even that is something which is ultimately subjective and is in line with how we're going to assess what an offside position is or not. So at that point, is it better to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds in a system which is going to leave supporters and media and clubs as irate with decisions that have been made by officials as they ever have been beforehand, or do we just effectively accept that you will get bad decisions in football games and just get on with it? And for me, the latter argument seems to be substantially overriding the former now.
Yes, I would agree, but I mean, Pandora is out of the box. It's not going back in. It's Pandora wasn't in the box, was it? It was her box. That's the key thing to remember about that whole Pandora and her box situation. It's not going back into the box. It's not going away. We're not going to be able to magically go back to a pre-non-VAR era. That's done. And it surely is about how we work to improve that system now, which is essentially what the Aberdeen statement is saying, Martin Ingram.
Never let it be said that Here We Go podcast isn't on top of its Greek mythology. It's effectively what the club's saying, and I think in fairness that is the kind of aspect that the club were at pains to point out within the statement, that while obviously the reason that we're querying this particular decision is as a consequence of an outcome which went against us, they did acknowledge that there is a wider concern in relation to how the system is operated, how effectively it is operated. It acknowledged that on a few occasions, and again, I think we would like to think that we've probably been on the worst side of these decisions more often than not, but there have been situations where we have been beneficiaries of that as well. And a good example of that would have been the Bojan Miovski last minute or injury time equaliser at St Mirren Park, which the officials then went back after the event to say that after they reviewed it again, they felt that it had been a double tap and that the goal shouldn't have stood. And even something like that, I think that's the kind of thing that you could go back and debate until the cows come home in relation to, do you think it was actually a double tap or not when he was taking the penalty? And it just, again, for me, it goes to show that even with the technologies, a lot of the time it's incredibly difficult to make a 100% objective decision, like, did you touch the ball twice in the process of kicking a football from the penalty spot or not? It's incredibly difficult. But yeah, I mean, I would love to be able to sit here and say clubs and supporters of the country are going to unite and we're going to be shot of this. You have doused a cold bucket of realism on all of us there, Richard, and I do not dispute that is undoubtedly what the ultimate resolution of it is going to be. But one of the aspects that we do have to iron out is that it does seem to be completely unacceptable that you found a situation where I think we can it's not good that we found ourselves in a situation where the technology failed at a critical moment in a game, but there has to be a clarity in relation to the processes and protocols which are followed in a situation where the technology does fail. Because if what we're saying is the role of the video assistant referees is to use technology to correct clear and obvious errors, yet on the other hand they're in a situation where that very technology isn't operating, how can you possibly find yourself then in a situation where the video assistant referees are effectively overriding the decision of the on-field referee based upon their interpretation of a still frame footage over the on-field decisions of the on-field referee and assistant referees. That to me seems wholly unacceptable and wholly out of kilter with what the point of the technology being brought into play was there for. And there, if we are going to have to bear with the technology going forward, these are the kind of things that will. I mean, it seems like it would be an easy fix just to be able to clear in relation to saying, yeah, we have technology here to assist with decisions that are taken in the field, but if the technology isn't working or isn't available, then you're not in a position to be able to use technology to do that, and you'll just have to stick with the decision which was arrived at in the field. That doesn't seem a controversial process to follow, but I again, you don't want me to harp back to this again, Richard, but I will continue to cycle back that regardless of whether we're stuck with this or not, I would really prefer that we weren't.
A cold bucket of realism. As far as metaphorical buckets go, it's not the worst you could have, I guess. Martin Clunas, I'm going to move off of this intolerable fixation on VAR, which is not just is it impacting going to the game, but by fuck, it's making online discourse even worse. People just listing litany of past decisions. It's so tedious, and this podcast has been subject to that as well, because too many times this season we've been drawn into debates about this and debates about the way it's being implemented. However, let's talk about a completely dead rubber game for Aberdeen, or is it a completely dead rubber game for Aberdeen? Have we done enough to dispel any thoughts of that relegation playoff, or do we still need more points and badly?
Well, technically, yes, we do need more points. Of course, Ross County are in 27, we're in 34. So, you know, sometimes you've accused me of being glass half empty, Richard. Sometimes you've accused me of being glass half full. Tonight, I'm not so sure. So until we're mathematically clear of 11th place, it is not a dead rubber, and none of the games will be dead rubbers.
That's magnificent. So tonight you're basically saying you don't know if there's a glass in the box, and you can only check by viewing it, you may actually change the condition of the glass in the box, and therefore...
I don't know, because I haven't seen in Pandora's box if there is a glass with anything in it. That's the problem, see.
Never let it be said that the Here We Go podcast doesn't grapple with the implications of quantum physics.
Until we're mathematically clear, I'm not taking any for granted. I think we're probably going to be fine, but I wouldn't put my mortgage on it, if I'm going to be totally honest with you.
Okay, but are you happy to be spared at least be spared the disappointment of the home collapse when we're hoping to get that top six place, which you've seen before, to be fair.
We're not going to be lifting that top six trophy this season, unfortunately. So that's something that we're going to have to come to terms with. I'm going to have a moment on Saturday at 4:45 when we're leaving the ground and have a chat. Well, not 4:45, because there'll no doubt be a VAR decision that'll keep me in the ground till 5:10 or something. We weren't going to talk about VAR. Sorry about that. It has all the hallmarks of a dead rubber, really. But Dundee obviously still have two games to play, of course, because tonight was off, don't they? So yeah. So they still have something to play for. So I'm sure they'll be up for it and all that kind of nonsense, all the kind of cliches and things like that. We just again have to do our jobs, do what we can, get another 3 points, get ourselves a further up the table, and try and finish top of the bottom six, which is a disgraceful thing as an Aberdeen fan to be thinking that we're aiming for, but it's what we have, I'm afraid.
It is what we have, although earlier Martin Ingram was condemning us already to next year's League Cup group stages, when who knows, that dream of Scottish Cup glory still remains slimly, but alive nonetheless. at hand in a couple of weeks' time. Anyway, that's been tonight's podcast, when Aberdeen have not quite yet announced a new manager, and if they do announce a new manager, it's still going to be 2 months till he takes up the post. But that's just the way of this football club right now. And we're the mugs that support them. You're the mugs for listening to this, and the mugs that turned up tonight to talk to me were Martin Clunas. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you very much, Richard. Is the mug half full, half empty, or is it in the box?
And Martin Ingram, thank you.
Yeah, our new incumbent both is and isn't the new manager of Aberdeen Football Club until such time as he's observed at the club.
Very good, everybody. Very good. Okay, until next time, we've been the Here We Go podcast. This is the only place you'll hear us. And come on, you Reds.